I remember there were cameras and things set up, and there were naked boys and girls, you know, and we were all roughly, you know, looking back, I'd say anywhere from 5 years old to 7 or 8. Well, they belonged, he belonged to a group later I found that was called NAMBLA, National Man-Boy Love Association. And I found that out from his, from the records, and that we'll get into later, that I had discovered. And that's where the accounting would come in. You know, I knew he was being paid, you know, every time he swapped with somebody else. And even though it would be reciprocal, but sometimes it wasn't reciprocal. They didn't have a kid, but they wanted a kid. And that's where they really paid through the nose. My father was very big into the political arena. And he knew people in the entertainment industry, whether they were singers or actors and directors, but also in the political arena. He was a Democrat, and he was in a California Democratic Congress. I don't know if that's what they called it at that time, but that's what it would be in today's terms. And during that process, he got to know some very important people, say, let's say.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I want to start first by warning you that this interview is very disturbing. It's one of the hardest interviews I've done ever, and it is one of the most important ones that I've done. It's really important that people are educated on what's really going on when it comes to pedophilia and satanic abuse. I have a person coming on. He's not using his real name, so I'm calling him Scott. He's not going to show his face. He is in his mid-60s, and he suffered from a whole childhood of pedophilia abuse and satanic abuse. His father was a dealer in that environment. He was high up in the Democratic Party, and he explains what actually went on. He saw faces. He isn't using names. He'd use a couple of some of the people that are no longer alive, but in general, he feels that his life is still in danger. He shares with us very personal. He's never came out before. This is his first time coming out. His wife and his kids didn't know about this situation. And he explains in a lot of detail of what was going on. And you're going to learn a lot from this. I learned that the WikiLeaks emails about the pool and the four kids for your entertainment with their name, their ages, that he makes sense of. He explains that and explains what they do at these political fundraisers. And he also talks about the pedophilia symbols and what he saw growing up and the symbols being used to tell other pedophiles where they can get children and how they exchange them. And his dad made a lot of money exchanging kids and procuring kids for not only pedophiles, but for pornographic films, for magazines, and for satanic abuse. And the satanic abuse is different than the pedophilia. There are pedophiles, and then there's the satanic abusers. And it's a different group, different agendas. And the ones that are doing the satanic abuse are the more powerful. They're politically connected. And he'll explain that, and you'll learn it in detail. I think this is a really important interview, and I hope it gets out there for others to hear. And I want to warn you, if it's something that really bothers you, then just turn it off and maybe you can come back to it, because it's important that people hear this. If it's something that you've already heard enough of and you understand, then maybe you don't need to hear this again. Although this is a pretty explosive interview that I haven't, has some details that I haven't heard elsewhere. So I want to get into that interview. No, I'm not going to turn on advertising throughout. As long as YouTube lets me, I'll have an advertisement right before it starts and right as it ends and nowhere else. I don't want this to be interrupted. I just don't feel that it's right. So if you think this material is important, I ask that you support my show at Patreon/Sarah Westall, and it helps me keep going. I dedicate a lot of time to this, and it helps me with, you know, with the costs and keep my work going. But let's get into that interview now. And I'm using the name Scott. Interview now with Scott. Hello, Scott. Thanks for joining the program.
Well, hi. How are you?
Well, I really appreciate you talking to us today, because I know it's a hard subject, and I know that you really wanted to get this out for people. So thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome.
Well, let's get right into it. You had a really hard childhood. Can you give us an overview of what happened to you when you were growing up?
Well, first of all, my mother died when I was 3, so my father remarried. And I guess it really began when I was around 7. My father used to go to a place that he used to call camp. And for lack of a better explanation, it was a nudist camp. And the first time he ever really did anything with me was when he was tanning me up with oil to keep me from burning. Needless to say, he concentrated on the groin area. And a 7-year-old really doesn't associate, when you're being told to protect you from the sun, that he's doing that. But the first time it really became evident was when he came into my room one night, about the same age, and got on the bed and basically pulled my pajama bottoms down, thinking I was asleep, and decided to start molesting me. At that point, he didn't insert other than a finger. But I was kind of traumatized by what had happened, and I didn't want to say that I knew what was going on because I, again, pretended I had been asleep. That wouldn't have been so bad, but I had one of my new friends who just moved in down the street about 4 houses was spending the night one night and just a few weeks later. And when he came in, he didn't come to me, he went to him. And after that day, he couldn't play with me anymore. So apparently he had told his parents, and he didn't tell me what he had said or what had happened. But it was obvious that I pretty much knew what happened.
Your dad
But
molested him?
yes, he
Okay.
did, and I was basically in shock and awe while it was going on. I was horrified. One thing about my father was that he used to get tired or bored very quickly with, I want to say, a victim now, because I'm an adult now. As a matter of fact, I'm up there in years, and these events did not escape my memory. But when he got bored with me, he would actually trade me with other parents, and I don't know where he met these people or how he knew of them, but they would take me to their house or to a place that was unknown to wherever I was. Could be a warehouse, it could have been an old garage, it could have been, just anywhere, an old house or an empty house. And then we would swap, and I would go with that other person, usually a man. And I never went with women, it was always with men. And they would have their way with me. And that's, I guess, my father was the first one that basically raped me, and that was about 2 months before that event happened. And he did it several nights in a row, actually, and I was bleeding pretty profusely and refused to get dressed in gym class because there was always blood in my shorts when I went down, and it just kind of would have embarrassed me. And he sent me to the nurse one time to check, and I told her, "No, I'm just not feeling good." So I got out of a physical check. Those were really the first experiences that I ever knew of. Eventually, there started to be more and more people, a group of people with their kids, usually boys, but sometimes girls. And one place that we went to was in Los Angeles. And I remember the Los Angeles Bridge connecting one of the main roads in LA. It wasn't on the interstate. And as we went in, it's pretty much in the industrial area. I can even remember the street lights. So hold on a second. The thing is the street lights were such that it was just like an omen to me. And last time I went there was maybe 30 years ago, and I still had the traumatic effect of the street lights going on the bridge. It's just kind of hard to recall. And I'm saying hard to recall, not that I don't remember, it's that it's difficult to speak about it. Anyway, when we got into the warehouse, I remember there were cameras and things set up, and there were naked boys and girls, and we were all roughly, looking back, I'd say anywhere from 5 years old to 7 or 8. And they would give us a pill and make us take it. And they said, we'll be in for you in a minute. In the meantime, you can play with your friends or your new friends, make some new friends. And they would come out, and eventually they would grab two of us or three of us. And it was always with an adult and usually a male. So,
would they?
And it was really a weird feeling.
Were they doing a film, a pornographic film?
Not at first. The first group were basically swapping kids, and you know, so it'd be if say somebody had a boy and a girl or two boys, he would get me for the two boys for a longer period of time than my father had with their kids.
So it was
sometimes,
and there was quite a bit of people that would do this. It was a kind of a known commodity thing that people would swap kids.
Well, he belonged to a group later I found that was called NAMBLA, National Man Boy Love Association.
Okay.
And I found that out from the records, and that we'll get into later, that I had discovered. And that's where the accounting would come in. You know, I knew he was being paid, you know, every time he swapped me with somebody else. And even though it would be reciprocal, but sometimes it wasn't reciprocal. They didn't have a kid, but they wanted a kid. And that's where they really paid through the nose. It wasn't until I was about, I'd say 8, maybe half a year later, a year later, that we started the filming. And sometimes it was always an adult in the filming. So they always filmed with an adult having sex with kids. And often there would be boys, just boys together, two boys, or one boy and one girl with the adult. And sometimes they would force us to have sex with each other. And that's really where it all began. And that's where I really got angry and was always in pain and tried to get out of gym class because, again, it hurts. You know, at that age when an adult man penetrates.
And the little girls were having the same issues, I would imagine.
Yeah, they did. I never really knew any of the girls. I really didn't know any of the kids until later. When I was I'd say 6 months, maybe to a year after that, he would take me out to an area in Ontario, California, by the Ontario Motor Speedway at the time. And there were a lot of businesses on the opposite side of the interstate, on the east side of the interstate. And that's where he would drop me off with other kids. And this happened frequently. And what he would do was that when he dropped me off, I'd get put into a 2-ton truck. Only because I know what it is today, but then I didn't know what it was, just a big truck. And it didn't have any writings on it. It was white. And I remember that the floorboards had some holes in it where I could actually kind of see some angles that I would recognize the area. And we would head east on the interstate, but there'd be about 8 or 9 of us in the truck. And we went out to the desert in what's the name of the place? Palm Springs. And we never made it to Palm Springs because we would turn off and it would go up into the mountains. And that's when they got into some really weird stuff, you know, because they would all be in black robes and naked underneath. And some faces I recognized, some I didn't. My father was very big into the political arena, and he knew people in the entertainment industry, whether they were singers or actors and directors, but also in the political arena. He was a Democrat, and he was in a California Democratic Congress. I don't know if that's what they called it at that time, but that's what it would be in today's terms. And during that process, he got to know some very important people, let's say.
And do you remember some of the people that you saw?
I can tell you that one was a governor of the state of Arizona. I can tell you that some were associated with the then governor of California, which is Brown, you know, the current governor's father. And I remember, you know, people more into the fundraising part of it. The people that would collect the money. I remember oftentimes when he'd have a fundraiser at the house. He had a big house. And which is ironic because I know that he was a shoe salesman, and he also did some insurance stuff. I couldn't, you know, then I didn't really put two and two together, but as an adult, I know that the shoe salesman cannot afford a 3,000 square foot home in a nice swanky area.
Exactly. Yeah.
It just wasn't normal. And so this is why, oh, that explains why he had such a nice house and we had a swimming pool and yada, yada, yada. But he would have fundraisers in this house, and sometimes upwards of 200 people would come. They would be in and out all the time. And it wasn't until the tallying up from the bar and the tallying up from the entrance and the pre-sale tickets and stuff that they would do it up, that the group involved with the collection of the monies would then be entertained by their boys or their daughters. And again, it was an area when my stepmother really hated coming at that point.
Well,
my mother died when I was three and he remarried.
Was it after the party then they'd stick around and then be entertained by the children?
Exactly. It was after the party and after all the monies were counted. The only people that were there were a handful of maybe five or six people that tallied what the intake was. And whatever happened with those funds, I have no idea. But then we would all entertain the people that were left again. And they would take out their 8mm cameras and take shots of us, or at that time, Polaroid cameras and take shots of us.
When you saw the WikiLeaks email, I'm not sure if you saw it or not, but the WikiLeaks email about the Democratic National Party, a fundraiser for Clinton, and they were talking about having four children that were going to be in the hot tub to entertain people. Is that what they were talking about?
Yeah, that's pretty much what they were talking about. A lot of times I would assume that things haven't changed much, that during one of their political parties or get-togethers that the children would come in after everybody was pretty, let's say the party was until midnight. It would be about 1 o'clock that the festivities would start with the children. So that's when things became interesting for them and became terrible for us. We were in terror. Some of the kids were, was their first time. And I guess I kind of took it as a way of soothing the kids, calming them down.
How old were you at the time when the political stuff started happening?
8 or 9.
Okay, and how old were the other children?
From about 5 to maybe 10.
So how many?
Was
it all adult males? And how many would penetrate a little one at the same time? Would it, they just kind of like a gang rape?
Well, they wouldn't penetrate at the same time. It was a gang rape. They sometimes put us in a circle and they would, circle around us. And when they, climaxed, then they would move to the next one, but it wasn't because men can only climax so much in an hour, even though some could do it quite more often. The thing is that even though that they were having their fun, it was always in a different way. It could have been through fellatio or something along that line, or they would paint us up, in a fun way for them. Certainly wouldn't have been a way I would have painted myself up. These people, even today when I see a political gathering, I can't help but wonder what's going on after the party. And when it came to light with the Pizzagate, that's when a lot of these memories started to flood back with me, because I pretty much put it back into my subconscious, but I couldn't get away from it with Pizzagate.
Because a lot of what people were saying and what you were hearing was exactly what you experienced.
Pretty much. And then, when I forgot what his name is, one of the actors, Corey Feldman, I think, was coming out and talking about the Hollywood industry. There were times that I remember, some people from the industry, I don't remember their names, I just knew that they were on television shows, were in there. I do remember, what was his name from Hogan's Heroes, the main lead character. He was often there.
He was an adult that was raping the children.
He was an adult.
Yeah.
I forgot his name. He was on Hogan's Heroes. That I remember. And when Hogan's Heroes would come on television and my father wanted to watch it, it's like, I don't want to be here. I'm ready for bed. You know, so the thing is that I don't know what all of these kids went through in the industry, but I knew do know that they were part of the parties in some cases.
Do you remember being there
And
when they
I
were
don't
there?
know what. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know that one of them from a really popular sci-fi series, and I'm not going to mention names because he's still alive, was there. And he played a child actor in a sci-fi show. And I had first met him at the party, and eventually when we moved into that new house I was telling you about where the parties were at, he was in my same school. And so I was, I think, in the sixth grade, maybe fifth grade at the time, up to that point. So it went on for quite a while.
So now, was there a difference between, because you said you experienced pedophilia, where people would take advantage of the children and they do it in groups and things. And then there was satanic worship and rituals that you also saw. Now, were they the same people or were they different people that would do, you know, the just the raping and the enjoying children versus the satanic ritual abuse?
It was usually different people, but I would say very prominent people. I mean, I do remember a political face, you know, that I already said was a state governor of California. And I think he's deceased now, which is why I can go ahead and talk about it, but I don't want to mention names. But in the, when our truck got up by Palm Springs, I just remember that it was the Palm Springs area because it's often hot at night. And the desert was pretty scary, you know, unless you were around the adults, because there would be creatures and animals, and whether it be lizards or snakes, and we didn't want to be out of the truck. But it was too hot to stay in the truck, so they would leave the door open for us and told us to stay where we were at. Sometimes they had a chain, like a chain net that would pull back and forth and lock so that they could lock us in and we still had the air. But what they did, they had an altar set up, and it was just a stone table. And on the at the foot of the altar, and I had to stop and think what direction Jesus has usually had us facing. It was kind of an inverted wooden cross, and sometimes they would hang us by tying us on the rope, and then tying us by the wrist, and tying us at the waist. And that's when they would do the little, I don't know what they were speaking. I would say Latin, but I, you know, at that age, I couldn't tell you. I don't remember. I just know that they were speaking a language I didn't understand. At that age, I spoke several languages already because my mother was from, between a housekeeper, my stepfather, or my father, and my nanny, I learned three languages. My grandmother spoke a fourth, and so I learned those languages as a young boy. And it wasn't anything I recognized. But they would chant, and they would have these torches burning, but they were naked under their black robes, and their robes kind of the hood kind of came down around the eyebrow. But you could see that they were wearing very expensive watches or had very expensive rings or jewelry on their hands. So I know that they were not, I want to say, the pauper. They were from very wealthy people or families. But that happened on the average, I guess, it lasted for about 3 years before I finally ran away.
How often did it happen?
I was,
like once a week?
At least once a month.
Okay.
About once a month.
And then how many other children were with you when that would happen?
Usually in the vehicle, you know, in the back of the truck, I would say there were usually about 5 to 7.
And
often when we'd be coming home, there would only be, you know, 3 or 4.
So what do you think
I don't
happened?
Know what they did with the kids afterwards.
Okay, and what were their ages?
Well, let's put it this, they were young, usually under 5 or 6 that they would be gone.
Oh, so the real little ones.
When they were, you know.
The real little ones wouldn't
real
make
little
it.
Ones would.
Wouldn't make it?
Didn't come home with us. I don't know whether they made it or not. They were naked. We weren't naked in the back of the van. Okay, we weren't naked in the back of the truck. They undressed us after we arrived. That's how I know it was in the desert. And because I've always had a really good sense of direction, and the way the truck was moving, I knew we were headed east, and because of the heat, I knew we were in the desert. And that's and I could see the city lights from where we were at night. And it was basically where Palm Springs, or yeah, Palm Springs would be.
So if a
And,
child,
so even as a
go
young,
on. If a child
go
was like
ahead.
4 or 5, what was the youngest that you saw?
I'd say five.
Okay. So
Little
those,
guys.
the little ones, now they can't, I imagine they can't handle the grown men. And now would they stop if these children were being physically ripped apart or hurt?
I could hear the screams of the kids in the truck. They were probably maybe about 100 feet away, and they were behind the rocks. We couldn't see what was going on from the truck area, but we could hear them screaming.
And those were the
And
kids
then
that
some of
didn't.
the kids,
Those were the
not
kids.
always, sometimes the kid,
Okay, go.
even I would scream sometimes because it hurt, but
Sure.
they were putting into your rectum, not only their sexual organs, but things like dildos and sticks and God knows what else.
Oh, God.
And it hurt, and I would scream. And the ones that didn't come home, I don't know what happened to them. Did I ever see any bodies? No, but I saw a lot of blood. And at the age, I couldn't tell you whether the blood was from being desaggregated or sangrenated, is that the word? Where they would lose blood.
From pen the
If there was a
penetration.
normal amount. Yeah, I couldn't tell you because they had. And even then, some of the kids that I saw there was usually only up to three or four out at a time. And I don't believe that we were the only truck there or the only people that brought kids, because they
Oh,
could have
geez.
brought kids with them in their limousines or whatever.
Now, where are they getting these children?
Because
Your
a
dad?
lot of them, they
Go ahead.
pick up runaways. They pick up a lot of runaways. I remember my stepfather picking up kids as young as 10 and 12 years old at the train station, or not the train station, the bus station in Los Angeles. And they would look lost and standing on the road, not knowing what to do or where to go. And they had their roll with them, kind of like a blanket rolled up with a small bag of what was their, I guess, their possessions. I never went, I never saw him pick them up, but I saw him cruising, places like the bus station and even driving around town. Because we were only maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes by car to downtown Los Angeles. We were somewhere on off of Wilshire Boulevard. And I remember we were across the street and down the street about half a mile from Marilyn Monroe was buried. I do remember the she was buried there. That was what I was told when we went by it. I don't know what I never really looked up what cemetery she was in, but it was off Wilshire Boulevard.
So, when these men were in their robes, did they have masks on or were their faces showing?
Some had black, and it was black makeup around their eyes, kind of like a painted-on mask. Some didn't, and the ones that didn't were, like I said, I recognized them from another event that may have happened at the fundraiser. The one thing that my father never realized is that I had a really good memory, even as a small boy. I could remember a phone number if it was read to me one time. And it's a form of consciousness. I want to say an indigo child because, again, I had a high IQ. I remember being tested when I was about 11 in school, and they said that I could probably go into high school if I wanted to, but I still lacked a lot of credits. So I knew I was an intelligent boy, but again, it was just as terrifying for me as it would have been for anybody. It's a little easier now to talk about it because I'm over, just over 60. And the thing is that it happened a very long time ago, but it's as fresh as it happened yesterday.
Well, so it was in the 70s that this occurred.
Yeah, no, actually closer to the 60s, early
Okay.
60s.
Okay, and
I was
so.
born in early 50s.
Okay, and so.
So late 50s, early 60s is when it began.
And so, as far as you know, based on all the stuff that came out with Pizzagate and those emails and what you're hearing, that's what you experience. And so, as far as you know, that all this stuff is still going on.
Most definitely. As a matter of fact, when I was young, I would say I was probably about 11 or 12. There was a place in Glendale, California that we used to go to. And I met a family by the name of the McMartins. And I knew that they had a school. That's all I knew. And they were basically a preschool type place. And they would have filming sessions in this house in Glendale. But ironically, that I remember the houses on both sides of them were vacant and had signs up that they were condemned. But yet their house was not. And we would go into the basement there, and it was padded. I mean, it had like extra padding on the walls. Reminded me, you know, later in years when I saw my first padded cell with these square tiles, I guess, about a foot, you know, foot by foot on the walls. So I'm sure it muffled everything that went out. But they would have filming sessions in there, adults with adult with kids or kids with kids. And usually they would drug us up, and to the point where we were pretty much cooperative with anything they wanted to do. And it dulled the pain until we started to wake up. Later in life, when after my father had died, you know, I found my stepmother didn't understand, you know, paperwork and stuff. So she asked me to go through my father's office. And in that office, he had all of his nice shoes, his patent leather shoes for his tuxes and whatnot, on a wall, on shelves. On the other side, he had books that were standing on end. And in the middle, he had pictures and certificates and whatnot. But when I started to remove all the shoes down, my stepmother told me to put them in the Salvation Army box, so I did. But as I got the shoes off, I guess their weight was holding the back panel in place because it started to come forward and push the shelves off the wall. So I put the shelves down and pulled the back panel out. And back there, I found dozens of kiddie porn magazines. I found dozens of 8mm reels of film. I found ledgers and diaries that my father used to keep. And yes, it did name names, but he used an abbreviation for each name, and usually three initials, and sometimes a number, and how much he collected. And so it was kind of like a ledger of what he would collect, whether it was for movies, whether it was for one-on-one contact, that type of thing. So here it was about 1 o'clock in the morning. My family had already gone to sleep. I was married and had two kids at the time. And my stepmother had taken her night medication, so I knew she was out. I guess it was about midnight, 1 o'clock. I threw two garbage bags, two 50-gallon garbage bags full of stuff, because it was deep, you know, and it went into the garage. And so I put those in the back of my car, and I thought, now what am I going to do with it? So I ended up driving down Highway Interstate 5 and got off on exits all the way to San Diego. And every exit I got up, I would take an 8mm roll of film or two and then start taking a pair of scissors to it and cutting it up in tiny little bits, which was time consuming. But when you overlap it and overlap it and overlap it and then start cutting, maybe the process go a little faster. The books, the pornographic images, I actually found myself in about 7 of the 30 or 40 that he had. And I remembered the sessions when they were done. And I certainly didn't want my wife to know about this. My stepmother, I really don't believe that she knew what was going on, even though I had my suspicions. I was never sure if she knew. She never let on that she knew what was happening. And so by the time I got to San Diego, I had most of the bag, the first bag gone, and I did the same thing on the way back to L.A. And I come walking in the house, I guess about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. But before I came in, I had to have an excuse because I knew my stepmother would be up. So I stopped and got some donuts at Dunkin' Donuts and said, you know, I was up late, so I just went and grabbed some coffee and some donuts. And, of course, she bought it. But I thought at that point that I was safe, that I was okay, that nobody would discover my secret. Now, it's kind of weird to think about it. It's just like it makes me cry, want to cry. But after my father died, about I guess it was about 2 weeks before I went to the house. And the only reason I'd gone down there is because my family was on vacation in Los Angeles and took the kids to Disneyland for the first time. And I thought it'd be kind of nice to just stop and say hello. I didn't go. I hadn't been there since my father's funeral. And I came alone for that a few weeks earlier. And I didn't stay with my stepmother. I stayed in a hotel. I didn't want to be there for more than I needed to be. So I was only there for 2 days. But there was a woman that used to be a friend of my father's, and she'd come and get my brother and I. And my brother, by the way, I don't believe he ever molested him because he's my half-brother with the father that I had, or with the stepmother I had. And my father basically was the common gene. And I used to threaten him that if he ever did anything to the two younger boys, that I would kill him. I would literally kill him. And I meant it. And he knew that I meant it. So I don't think he ever bothered them. But after the funeral, we went to the cemetery to bury him. And after everybody had left, I made notation where the cemetery was at. And I really came back late that night, about 1 o'clock, snuck into the cemetery because you can't be there after dark. And I went all the way back of the cemetery, which had a beautiful view of Los Angeles. I don't remember the name of it. I remember basically where it's at. And I do remember the wonderful view of L.A., the skyline. And I basically urinated and defecated on his grave.
Oh, I deserve that.
That's what I felt at the time. And I never really said anything to anybody. My mother knew I was at the funeral. One of the family friends that used to come and collect my brother and I started telling about this. And we really felt thankful that she was going to take care of us while they were in Vegas somewhere. Because they would go to Vegas frequently. It's only a 4-hour drive from the Los Angeles area. And so she would calm us down. She had an idea that we were abused physically, the spankings and stuff from her stepmother. She used to beat me with a wire hanger. That's my email notification. She used to beat me with a wire hanger. And, of course, I never confessed to anything because normally I didn't do what I was being accused of. Usually the little brothers were the ones that were guilty. And she believed them, of course, over me. But I remember this friend would take care of us, and she really calmed us down. And we were always felt loved by her. Well, during my father's funeral at the Mass, I remember she got really rude with me. Somebody had handed me an envelope to give my stepmother, and I knew it was a check for money in it, and I was going to give it to her when I saw her. But this friend that used to take care of us as a kid snatched it out of my hand and said, "I will give it to Sally." Mm. And so she took it. Well, I guess about, I want to say almost 10 years later, her husband had passed away, and both my stepmother and father were long gone. But I was in L.A. for some business. And I went to go see this lady. And it was out in East Los Angeles, I guess about a 30-minute drive from downtown L.A. And she still lived in the same house. And she started to close the door on me. And I said, let me tell you something. You don't know what happened to me, but you were my lifesaver when you came and got us. And she started to listen to me through the screen door. And after I started to tell her what my father put us through, she began to cry and I began to cry. She said she never really knew that was going on. And she began to apologize. I says, "No, you gave me moments of happiness. You don't need to apologize. And I understand why you felt the way you felt at the funeral. Because I'm sure my father was telling you different things as to why I was gone. I ran away from home when I was a freshman in high school. I couldn't take it anymore." Well, I ran away successfully when I was a freshman in high school. I ran away probably a total of about 12 times from the time I was old enough to know that I wanted to go away. I wanted to go to my grandmother in Arizona. And
was that your mother's mother?
My mother's mother.
Okay.
And she's the one that taught me Italian, because she would talk to me in Italian. And so I was trying to get out there, and every time, here's a young man on the interstate, because the shortest distance from where I was at to where I wanted to go was on the Interstate 10 towards Florida, but it was in Arizona that I was going to stop. And often I would get picked up by a highway patrolman or an unmarked car that would drag me all the way back home. They would take my report, but I never told the cops what was going on because I didn't want to admit that this was happening to a stranger. And secondly, I didn't want to get in too much trouble with my stepfather because God knows what he would have done. He probably killed me.